Welcome back to 500 Open Tabs. I'm Hannah Hillam.
I'm Kaveh Taharian, and everyone is mad at us, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we were just discussing how...
Until proved otherwise.
How we wake up every morning and assume that everyone's mad at us.
Yeah.
And we go throughout the day being like, how do we... prove to them that see, they're already mad at us for not being able to get through this sentence.
They're mad at us right now.
Yeah.
we just started this and everyone's like, I'm about to turn this off because these two people suck.
Welcome back to
and
the podcast.
And they don't listen.
Yeah.
They don't listen. They don't turn in their assignments on time. Yeah, welcome back.
Welcome back. It's been a weird week. Of course, we recorded this in advance, as we do. Yesterday was the crazy, you know, eclipse thing that everyone was really stressed out about and thought all kinds of chaotic stuff was going to happen. No one got sacrificed, as far as I know. No one's dead and buried in the ground.
I got raptured. And then I was like, we got really sick of it, and I immediately unraptured myself. I don't know what I'm saying.
Unraptured. I don't even know what that means, but I take it.
You don't know what raptured means?
I don't know what unraptured means.
I made that up just now.
Oh, okay. It's an official term in Urban Dictionary now.
Yeah. Did you get to see the eclipse?
No, we just did. I tried, but then I decided I should probably keep my vision. No, in California,
maybe.
We were not in any of the whatever totality or whatever. So my wife took out a... Apparently, you can... do this where you bring a colander out and like the circles of the colander will act as like a filter for the light, and then it shows you like little half moons because it's getting blocked.
Half moons.
It's really cool.
See, I get it. Like whenever there's an eclipse, I'm like, oh, I know why everybody in the olden days was like, oh, God's about to
it'll blow your mind
right there.
Yeah,
the shadows being crescent shaped, I'm like, oh yeah, the end of the world is here.
Yeah,
100%
totally. That's all we did. You?
Yeah.
Other than being what did you say?
Unraptured.
Unraptured. Yeah. Other than being unraptured, did you do anything fun?
Yeah. So I got an hour off, of course. So I planned my day an hour off. I thought it was going to be at noon and not 11. And so I decided to go swimming.
Mm.
And with my daughter, we get out of the pool and everyone's outside looking at it at the YMCA. And I'm like, oh. And so they gave us glasses to use and it was fun.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Great. I'm glad you didn't lose your vision. Yeah. Nice.
I didn't. Not this time.
Good. Your vision was good because you can use it to research your tab for this week. You like that transition?
Endless. That was a good one.
I really am getting much better at this. You're up first.
I'm up first. Wait, what are we doing here again?
Yeah, I don't know. Tabs, I guess.
So yeah, I'll just get it right into it.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite tabs. Because it's never I've never closed it.
Okay.
Like it's just been open. So it's been open since 2020. and it is the Wikipedia page for Jonathan the Tortoise.
Okay.
And Jonathan the Tortoise is one of my favorite creatures on Earth because he looks insane. He's got a tiny little head and a gigantic tortoise body.
Love it.
And I love drawing him. I've drawn him several times on stream. And I didn't know much more about him besides I liked what he looked like and that he is the oldest known living animal, land animal.
Oh, really?
Honor. Yeah. Have you ever heard of this guy?
I feel like I've come across some of this kind of lore before, but I've never admittedly done like a deep divey type thing about it. But I feel like I've seen pictures of, what is he, like a few hundred years old?
He's almost 200 years old.
Holy crap.
He was born in 1832.
Wow.
And they say that's a pretty like modest estimate because that's like the lowest that he could have been. He could even be older. I'm going to get into why I'm obsessed with Jonathan.
I mean, I'm already obsessed. This is a 200-year-old tortoise with a tiny head and a big body. I don't need to know much more than that to love this guy.
he just looks. I mean,
tired.
It's funny because Lil Nas X, you know, the rapper,
slash country singer.
He did a tweet that was like, someone had like written about how it was Jonathan's 188th birthday or something. And Lil Nas X retweeted it and said, this guy was alive for slavery and he did nothing. I thought that was pretty
funny.
Come on,
Jonathan, be on the right side of history this time.
Come on. You can't just be neutral in that. Anyway, that made me laugh really hard. And anyway, so back to Jonathan. Jonathan was born in 1832, which makes him 192 years old
Wow.
right now. He just had his 192nd birthday. And
did they say what he did for his 192nd birthday?
He ate a cake made of vegetables.
Nice.
Really cute. And he's got like this old withered face. Yeah. And he's just, you know,
kids today.
Kids today. No, don't even. Never mind. I'm not even going to bring up.
I already knew what you were going to say.
Yeah. kids today make money doing their own work. Anyway, so he is what is called a Seychelles giant tortoise. That's his breed.
Okay.
Breed? No.
Genus. Did we do this with the ant genus. One? Yeah, genus, ant, species, yeah. Whatever, something or other. Phylodoe.
Yeah. The kind, yeah, I love croissants.
Phylum, kingdom.
Philip.
Philip. It's his Phil.
We started this day talking to each other. We started goofy. So this might be a goofy episode.
As opposed to all the extremely serious episodes we've done before.
Well, some of them have been.
That's true.
No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Okay. Back to Jonathan.
Yeah.
So Seychelles tortoises are a little bit controversial because people say that they aren't actually a subspecies of.
Because of their neutral stance on slavery.
That's on slavery. Yeah, they are a controversial species, yeah, because of their neutral stance on slavery, and also because they are a subspecies of a different tortoise.
So not okay.
A turtle,
yeah,
a tortoise called the Aldabra giant tortoises. Oh. And these tortoises live all over. I know it sounds like a magic word.
Yeah, I was gonna say like abracadabra.
Aldabra,
yeah.
They live all over the Western Indian Ocean on different islands, and but people would posit that Jonathan is actually a subspecies of the Aldabra. They call a Seychelles giant tortoise, but they don't really know because he's the last one of his species. If he is a Seychelles giant tortoise, he's the last one.
Oh my God.
So these are some of the largest tortoises on Earth. These Aldabras, they weigh 550 pounds.
Whoa.
Or 250 kilograms for literally anyone else in the
everyone
world.
Outside the States.
And the females weigh like a little less than that, but they're massive. Like full grown, if they extend their head, they can go like up to your shoulder. Like they're so big.
Wow. Do you know difference between the abracadabra and the Seychelles was? Like what makes the Seychelles like a subspecies, a subset of it that makes them unique? Do you know?
Very little.
Okay.
It's just like where they live, I guess, and the way that their the like lines on their and like the shape of their
it's just like markings and like
shell
stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're very similar.
So he doesn't like breathe fire or something that's like very specific to him.
Not that anyone's seen yet, but
he is old.
We know he doesn't have good opinions on things, so maybe he's just keeping himself.
We love him, but we don't want to invite him over for Thanksgiving necessarily and get into an argument with like the younger cousins who are a little bit more progressive.
Yeah, it'll ruin everything.
Yeah. He's a product of his time.
He's a product of his time. Point is, I say point is so much, it pisses me off. these turtles. Just as we now say, throw me in the bog, please. Throw me in the bog. These tortoises used to be everywhere until, can you guess what happened?
People.
Europeans.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, people. But specifically Europeans.
Oh.
Dutch, English. Yeah, so
what?
They started.
Those guys ate these things.
Can you believe it?
Oh, my God.
Their track record. You would never have known. But a bunch of English sailors were all down there. And not just English, like a bunch of European mm-hmm. sailors. And they realized that these tortoises made great meals because you didn't have to feed them. They didn't drink very much water. So they could keep them on their ships for like weeks at a time.
Oh.
And not have to worry about food.
Yeah.
You get a bunch of protein. And apparently they were delicious.
It's like it's like a cactus. It's like,
yes,
or like a succulent. You don't have to give it any water and it'll just thrive. It's
right.
Like a tortoise is that.
You just can't like feed it a banana or a lemon and it's like
plus,
good to go.
They're probably eating them out of the shell, much like a sourdough bowl of some sort or something. Like a chowder bowl where like its container is the thing. That's horrible. Don't do that.
You know what? Listen. Let's make some merch, okay? It's gonna be a bowl shaped like a tortoise shell.
Mm-hmm. With with British sailors inside that you can eat. See how they like it.
Yeah. Yeah. That reminds me of the one time Instagram, one of my comics got reported and deleted.
Oh.
It's because I drew a picture of the Earth putting humans in a blender and mixing it up.
I'm here for that.
Yeah, me too. It got deleted. Anyway, what am I trying to say? I'm so derailed right now.
No, it's Seychelles. The English are coming in. They're using them they're using them as like astronaut food essentially when they're on their ships.
Exactly. And they just kept doing this for like 100 years. And then in the early 1800s, mm-hmm. that's when Charles Darwin, actually in the same year that Jonathan was born, Charles Darwin was like zipping all over these islands, checking out these tortoises and being like, we need to save these things.
Yeah.
Which gives, not just, he was into the Galapagos turtles, but these ones he was like, he like petitioned the government of Seychelles to actually like count them, like to, oh, it just gave a thumbs up on my screen.
What the hell? I didn't realize it would do that. Oh, it's an Apple thing, I
Interesting.
Think.
Interesting. I want to die. I don't want to die. I don't. Listen, I don't want to die.
Yeah.
I'm not ready.
Darwin.
I lost my place.
Darwin.
Give
Darwin's,
me a second.
Darwin's trying to get the governments to save.
So yeah, they were one of the very first protected species on Earth.
Oh, really? They were the first ones?
Yeah. One of the first.
That's
And it was because of Darwin and a bunch of other like
cool.
naturalists and scientists. They were like, bro, we're eating these way too fast. We need to stop.
Yeah.
Also, this Galapagos place is insane.
Yeah.
And I'm about to change the entire world with my theory of evolution. And so Darwin was instrumental in getting these preserved. But by then it was kind of too late. A lot of the species had been killed off and hunted.
That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't
but
like that.
No, me neither. They spend their time in herds mainly, and sometimes individuals. So
really?
That's,
See, that's so crazy because like you only ever think of, I mean, I guess that's just a product of them not being around as much, but the idea of seeing like 50 tortoises together, like moving
right.
like wildebeests, like through a valley of some sort.
So slow.
Yeah. Simba could have saved Mufasa if it was like, if it was a tortoise stampede.
Mufasa's like, no, just,
yeah, it'll be
just
fine.
Let them,
this is
going
to take a long time. Yeah.
That, Tortoise King.
Yeah, the Tortoise King. That sounds fun. I would have loved to see them in a herd. That would have been so much fun.
Oh, you still can.
Oh, you can.
They're still, they have these preserves. Yeah, and these islands in the Indian Ocean. They have these islands that have preserves, and people aren't even allowed near the island. It's like, that's for the tortoises, which is good.
Good.
Except for Jonathan. So back to Jonathan.
Yeah.
He is currently, okay, so he was born in 1832, which some of the things that were happening in 1832 was the uprising that Victor Hugo based Les Mis on, or Victor Hugo wrote about Les Mis. It was called the June Rebellion.
Right, I was going to say, which is not the French Revolution as I thought it was before I saw it.
Before or after.
After, yeah.
And Andrew Jackson was beating Henry Clay and becoming president of the United States. So,
great.
This thing was alive. Yeah, right?
Great guy.
And solid American.
Solid. So
Speaking
many.
Speaking of slavery stances,
yeah,
we're going to get into him. He's just on our $20 bill. No big deal. Right? So yeah, this turtle, tortoise.
I think you can call, we're just going to call him a turtle for the sake of this episode, because A, it's funny.
For the sake of my sanity?
Yeah, let's just call him a turtle. There's no rules. I mean, there are absolutely
rules
in science, but for,
nature has very clear rules.
Turtle, like, it'll just be a fun little term.
It's like that Pokemon. So yeah, so when he was born, Queen Victoria had, I think was 5 years old. So, or no, did she just first become, I can't remember when she became queen. Doesn't matter. So that's the 1832.
Yeah.
So, we don't really know what happened in the first 50 years of his life. In 1880s, like early 1880s, mm-hmm. These sailors brought Jonathan and two other tortoises with them to this island called St. Helena. It's in the Atlantic Ocean. It's west of Namibia. And if you keep going, you get to Brazil.
Namibia.
So it's like right there in the middle. Yeah. And it's this little tiny British territory who it has its own whole history. A bunch of Europeans fought over it. And fun fact is that after the Battle of Waterloo in 1815, Napoleon was exiled there.
Oh, it's that island.
And it's that island.
Okay.
And it's where he died.
Yeah.
So Jonathan was a gift to the governor, And the governor lived on this thing called the plantation house.
That's where I read about this. That's right. I was like the turtle, Napoleon. I was like the island. I'm like, okay, yes. Okay. I think that's how I know about it. That's what I had heard.
They never met though.
No.
Did you read about how they met?
No, but I remember something about the Napoleon Island and the turtle and then this whole, yes. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Continue. I just got excited because I was trying to remember like what,
So yeah, Jonathan's hanging out there in the 1880s and there's a picture of him. This is the earliest picture we have.
Nice.
Of, you go to the Dropbox and there's a picture of him with three or four people and one other tortoise. And it's worth looking at. It's pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That's from what year again you said?
1888.
Wow.
He's the one on the left.
Yeah.
He's chilling. Yeah. And that's the current governor and also a prisoner of war, apparently. I couldn't find out any more about that.
But, they're like, for your punishment, you have to stand in this photo with two awesome turtles. Sorry, tortoises.
Tortoises.
Okay.
So that was the first photo we have of him in the 1880s. And we don't really know what happens to him in the next like little while. He kind of just chills, lives with the governors. They don't name him because they had several tortoises.
Sure.
And then the next time we really hear much about him is that there's a picture taken of him with somebody in 1915. And then after that, it was 1932 before much was written about him. And that is when the governor...
he resurfaces in Nazi Germany.
Wow, this guy has a terrible, terrible politics. Except he's undercover.
That's true. He was trying to take down Hitler. He was trying to make up for the fact that he was like, listen, never again. I was neutral during slavery and I felt bad about it. So now I'm going to be on the right side of history. And he was part of like a very elaborate plan. Yeah. To try and murder Hitler.
Yeah.
Good for him.
He pulled the trigger that night in the bunker.
Yeah. He's all,
he was
screw
the one.
You, Eva Braun. Screw you, Hitler.
He's playing
the long game. Yeah.
But it was super, super slow. Hitler saw it coming, but whatever. Got to calm down for a second. I'm getting too worked up about Hitler dying and a turtle doing it. It's a tortoise. I'm going to be... a bunch of, like, tortoise experts are going to take me out behind the barn and execute me for saying turtle so many times. So, 1932. And this is when, like, world leaders start to come pose with him. Because he starts to become famous. Like, ooh, this...
they're trying to curry
tortoise,
favor.
And he's, well, no, they just want to see him. So he's still hanging out at the governor's house, but he's alone. And there's a picture of him with like the future Queen Elizabeth and her dad and her dad's dad.
Whoa.
So her dad's brother. And here's the weird thing about this era is that everyone who came to see him would always like sit on his back because... disrespectful.
Yeah, you don't do that to other heads of state. No. Did he get to sit on Queen Elizabeth's back?
Yes.
Eye for an eye. What's fair is fair. She should have had to take all 500 pounds of him on her back, just being like, oh, how do you like it?
How does it feel to be oppressed?
Yeah.
Literally. No, there's this picture of like King Edward, the one who abdicated. I know you don't care about this, but I do.
No. I remember this. I saw the king's speech. He's the one who wanted to party and like bang his other wife or whatever.
Also a Nazi.
Oh, he was a Nazi?
He loved the Nazis.
I didn't know that.
He hung out with Hitler.
I just know that his brother was the one who stuttered all the time.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
That guy saw this thing too. Anyway, Edward, the abdicator guy, stood on its back.
Surfing?
Yeah. There's a photo of him standing on the back of this tortoise. And that's the King of England
doing
that. What a
dick.
So, massively. And then his brother did the same thing. I think he sat on the back. After that, everyone was sitting on the back. But kids would go stand on the back. Anyway, poor Jonathan was like a sideshow.
Yeah, it was like, what the hell, man? He's like, what do you want from me?
Well, it's like similar to how, like when I went to see Stonehenge, people had carved their names into it.
It's like unbelievable.
There was like famous authors.
I can't.
No, I know. Multiple. Like, I mean, hundreds of names are on Stonehenge. And it's all like 1890, like a bunch of British people being like, I was here. Because you could just walk up to it.
Yeah.
It's insane. None.
Poor Jonathan just getting surfed on by the Nazi King of England.
before I fall apart.
Is that, wasn't there a surf Nazis? That's a thing, right? Is that the origins of surf Nazis?
I don't know what surf Nazis are.
Surf Nazis must die? Am I making this up? I swear that's a thing.
I don't know. You better look it up.
This is imperative. Yeah, Surf Nazis Must Die is a movie from 1987.
Well, they're on Jonathan.
We got someone we can Photoshop the former king of England surfing on Jonathan.
Yes, with wearing a Nazi uniform. Yeah. Anyway.
I'm sorry. I derailed you on that one. Continue.
I like that you're derailing me more. This is good. So let's fast forward to 1969. And Jonathan's still there, just hanging out. At this point, he's like 100-something years old. and he's alone. He's still alone, right? And he is an absolute menace.
Oh.
This is back when he was younger. And so he was a menace, a troublemaker, a total jerk. He would like wreck the gardens and overturn benches and just destroy everything.
Good for him.
I know.
A bunch of dickhead ass heads of state coming and sitting on top of him. He was just like, eat shit. I'm punk rock. I'm just going to ruin everything.
I'm going to ruin everything.
Yeah.
Dig holes in the garden, just destroy things. And they had tennis courts there. And he would just like rampage the tennis courts. And
I love
people would play croquet. They play croquet and he would just go sit in the middle of their game.
This guy, which, love him.
I love him.
Love
He's
everything about this. Yeah.
And they realized, wait a second, he might want some friends. So
you think?
Yeah. It's 50 years later. And so they bring over two other abracadabra.
Abracadabras. What was it? Abracadabra tortoises.
From the same area of the islands that he was from. So,
okay.
These are two new ones, and they're named Emma and David, and they're very young. And for some reason, they give all these turtles very human names, but
yeah,
whatever.
Also very white names, Emma and David and Jonathan. Yeah, thanks. So I'm sure people from the Seychelles are all named Emma and Jonathan and David.
Again, colonialism is in everything.
That's the worst part. They can't even get like ethnically appropriate names from where this person's, where these turtles are from.
They have to be named after like British, like upper class.
Yeah, aristocrats.
Aristocrats, yeah. Anyway, Emma and David. And David becomes his like best friend.
Oh, so that's sweet.
He and David are buddies. And Emma becomes his main target of admiration. And I use admiration. Ooh. In a very loose way, because he would just go for her. I mean, he and Emma, he mated with Emma like every day. He was obsessed with her.
Is mated like you're saying this as like
mated?
Mated. Okay. I thought you were saying he mated with her. Made it with her. Like you're trying to use cheeky like high school term. Mated.
No, I can't pronounce T's good because I'm from Utah.
No, it's okay. He sexually intercoursed her on the daily, is what you're saying.
Oh, constantly, yeah.
Good for him.
Whether
at least as long as it was consensual, I think that's fine.
When it comes to animals, I don't know.
Yeah.
How consensual anything is.
That's true.
Anyway, Emma didn't like. I don't know. I don't
know.
She didn't
tear up the tennis
Emma.
Courts as, in protest.
No, she. I think she was down.
Okay.
And it's funny because just recently, the veterinarian that takes care of him, said. In spite of his age, Jonathan still has a good libido.
Yeah, so that's my boy.
Even to this, day, he's very sexually active with.
Good for him.
Not just Emma, but I'll get into it. So
with David?
Well, no, never with David.
A moment, I just saw Jonathan with a bunch of bisexual lighting behind him running around the island destroying stuff.
Well, just to give me a second, because we're getting there.
All right.
weirdly enough, even though he and Emma were all, mating all day, Emma never laid any fertilized eggs.
Oh, no. He's shooting blanks.
So there was shooting blanks.
That's sad.
So there was no record of him siring any children, which is sad because he might be the last of his subspecies. So in 1992, they were given another female tortoise named Frederica.
Okay.
And that brought the total to four. And immediately he was on Frederica. Like just
swingers now. Now they're having foursomes.
It is a pansexual polycule on this governor's property.
Pansexual polycule of turtles.
I say pansexual because Frederica is not a female.
Oh.
Frederica is actually Frederick, and it took them 30 years to realize it. So,
hold on.
He and his...
How does it take them 30 years to not... Like, turtle...
It's really hard to tell.
Is it?
Yeah. It's like... Because when Frederica came to the island, she was only like two, and so I think she was still growing. They couldn't like see any of the gender markers yet, or but she got injured, and they were checking her out, and they were like, "Oh, this is not a girl. This is not a female turtle. This is a male. So we're changing it to Frederick, and Jonathan becomes a bisexual icon.
I was gonna say bisexual icon.
Jonathan is obsessed with Fred. He and Fred are lovers, and he rarely like does anything with Emma anymore.
Oh no, poor Emma!
You know?
Poor Emma got pushed
to
the side.
No, she's fine.
She's okay.
But it's funny because he and David were just friend zoned. David,
but maybe David's not into that.
He might not be.
But he was not having.
I don't know.
He wasn't having sex with Emma.
Emma, I think they all were.
Oh, they all were. Okay. Or it might have just been weird where he's like, "That's my best friend's girl for so long. I don't think I can." It feels like it's like violating some weird trust or something, like your best friend's wife.
I like to think of it as a polycule, but we'll go with that.
Like, there's a lot of complicated politics amongst like living on an island with the last four, or sorry, I guess he's the last one of the species, but there's not many options.
No, you can't take what you can get.
Or
David
might be asexual. Maybe he has no sexual drive. He's just happy to be there.
He's just happy to have friends.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting that he was like, he's like, no, this is my new life partner, this very young Fred.
There is something beautiful about like him finding love in a way that he didn't know when he was, but like, much older in life, or much later in life as he's older.
Almost the age of like 160 is when he was like, because he was into Emma, but like, I mean, he was, but not as much as he's bonded with Fred. Mm. So Johnny and Fred, and he's kind of become like this internet gay icon.
Love it.
In that, like, he's an icon. Yeah, he's like, look at him. I love it.
Yeah.
And I want to just say it's bisexual erasure to call him a gay icon, but whatever. LGBTQ icon. I got to point it out whenever I can. Anyway, they realized that even if he had produced offspring, since there's so few of these tortoises left, that it would have been like...
Inbreeding and stuff. Yeah.
So here's my favorite part. My other favorite part. What do his days look like? What has he been doing the last 192 years?
Okay.
Well, he walks around the grounds, digs around, hangs out, bangs his friends. he eats. He sunbathes, and that's pretty much it.
This is the greatest. That's all I ever want in life.
Right? Paradise.
Oh my God. No wonder that's the secret. It's just banging your friends and sunbathing every day. And then you'll live to the ripe old age of 200.
That's the key to life. That's the key. And our conservative values keep us dying young.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what I'm talking about. But this is really sweet. His main caretaker is named Teeny Lucy. I don't know if that's a nickname or her name. But she loves Jonathan so much. She loves spending time with him. She says being with him helps her slow down. And one of the things she said is, it's quiet up there. There's nobody around. And I can sit under a tree in the dripping rain with him for an hour just feeding him. It's quite a special moment with a chap like that. He's a real icon. And she went on to say that he's a charming old gentleman. He really is.
Nice.
So, he's fully blind now. And he can't really smell very well, but he's still in excellent condition.
He's not blind to ass. He could just target that shit right away. He's all my other senses might be gone except for my sense of where is their ass.
stop it. I love what you've done with this story. I was hoping. And you've taken it and you've run with it and it's glorious. Okay. So since he can't smell anymore either, he can't really find his food. So he started getting sick and they're we got to start feeding him.
Feed him, yeah.
And he got bounced right back. He's totally fine. One of his favorite things to do is listen to the tennis matches because he likes the sound of the ball hitting the ground.
I'm sure he does. He
follows it. The sound of the balls hitting the ground. Sometimes he drinks through his nose.
Okay, sure.
That's a little fact.
All right.
And he loves getting like scratches. Like he likes getting pet and scratched on his neck and under his belly. And he's extremely friendly. He follows the caretakers around. He's just like part of the.
He's just there.
The place.
It's funny when when you said earlier that she likes to sit with him under a tree, like while it's raining. Because I was like, it kind of makes me think of trees. They're like hundreds of years old that have all these rings. I'm like, it's kind of like a living tree in a way. And it's also got like the hard exterior of the shell and stuff. It's kind of funny. Yeah. It's like getting to hang out with a tree from the 1800s. But it's your pet and your friend.
That's just
not your pet, but your friend.
And you can actually like interact with it, whereas trees just stand there.
You can interact with trees. That's okay too.
You can. I had a that's a different story for a different day. Hmm. I don't know who's listening to this. So he has lived through 40 of our 46 presidents.
Wow.
Yes.
That's crazy.
I know.
Just to put that into that kind of perspective. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
He predates the theory of evolution. He predates electricity, photography. It blows my mind to think that this tortoise has met like every head of state. I mean, the British monarchy, at least. Right. You know. He probably met, I'm like speechless. It's so crazy to me.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's like a living tree. You're like, oh, this thing has been petted and sat on by Nazi kings of England.
Surfed on, don't forget, not sat on.
Surfed on by Nazi kings of England. He's also, sadly, recently, the most recent person to come meet him was Prince Andrew.
Ooh, noted pedophile and Jeffrey Epstein. He was on his way to Epstein's island. So he's just like, there's another island. I wonder if there's...
just hopping over.
Yeah. I wonder if they got the same ones that they got over on Epstein's island here.
And he gets there, he's like, just a tortoise, huh? Yeah. All right.
Not really. How old are you? Oh, that's way too old for me. And then he just moved along.
Yeah. All right, let me see your license. No, 119?
No, thanks.
190? No, thanks.
Yeah.
I prefer him younger. Anyway, yeah, that's kind of all I have on him, but he's one of my favorite creatures.
Love him.
But he's majestic. And if you look in the pictures, you can see how, like, throughout time, it's just the same tortoise. It's pretty cool.
So when, anyway, do you know,
Jonathan?
I have a couple of questions which you might not have any answers for, but do you know how long it takes for a tortoise of that size to reach full maturity in terms of size?
I do. So they could tell that he was of full maturity in the photo in the 1880s because of how he like measured up to the people around him.
Okay.
Which meant that full maturity, he had to have been at least 50.
Okay.
So at least, which is why they said 1832.
Okay, so 50 years is
when
it takes.
Older.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then apparently their lifespan is only 150. So
he's just some weirdo that can keep going.
He's living. Yeah. And he's got like a good diet. They think that some of the plants that are native to St. Helena are actually really helpful for longevity. But there's also been reports of other giant tortoises who have lived to be like 200, but they're very unverified. They're not verified. I got reading about a bunch of other old tortoises, and there's one named Lonesome George.
Lonesome George?
It almost made me cry. Yeah.
What's his deal?
Last of his species. He's gone. Last of his species. But he lived to be like over 100. There's a bunch of them, and they all got great names, human names.
Human names. They're just
human
British
names.
Aristocratic names.
What other names are there? I am just kidding. Jonathan the Tortoise.
What?
In all his glory.
A mensch, a gentleman.
Legend.
Legend started off on the wrong side of history, but...
He did.
Redeemed himself, as far as I'm concerned.
Uh-huh.
Killed Hitler.
Wrecking all those tenets.
Very slowly.
My goodness, he killed him. And you know what? That makes up for everything he may have thought about the owning of humans.
My thought is that when the Nazi king of England serfed him, he allowed it to happen because he wanted to give that guy a false sense of security so that the press would pick it up. So that later he could sneak in behind enemy lines and pretend to be like, you know, a Nazi sympathizer as a way to be like, listen, I let the Nazi king of England surf on me. I'm cool. You got to let me into Hitler's inner circle. And they were like,
you're right.
Clearly, he's a talking tortoise. Got to let this guy in.
He can talk and he's 200 years old.
Yeah. Or at that point, he was probably only 100.
100.
Right?
Yeah.
But still impressive. And he was the last of his. You know, Hitler probably liked that kind of crap. And that's when he got in and he's like,
he was way into weird crap.
Done.
It took him 2 full weeks to walk to the bunker, but he got there.
He got there. Slow and steady wins the race, as they say.
Yeah.
Mensch, yep. Mensch, good guy, good dude.
Yeah.
Love him.
I want to meet him.
If you ever go to
St. Helena, you can actually meet him. And
I wonder how much a trip would cost for us to go.
Probably a lot of money.
We should start crowdfunding
this
now.
Tourist spot. I think we've talked about crowdfunding multiple things we've talked about.
Yeah, we're supposed to go to Shingo at some point. That's the other one.
That's right.
In Japan. That's going to be another expensive trip. Listen, talk about leveraging this podcast into something else. I think if anyone that's listening that works at like the Discovery Channel or something or Netflix or whoever wants to give us a bunch of money, we'll go on vacation for you for a show.
We'll go anywhere you want.
Yeah, that we talk about on the show. And then we'll be like Anthony Bourdain, but less interesting and not inspiring to anyone, and just us tripping probably over and over again and ruining
stuff. And then laughing a lot. Just laughing endlessly. Like two kids in school.
Yeah.
That's the vibe we have.
The reviews will just be like baffling. They'll be like, who gave these idiots money?
Why are they doing this? That tortoise did not like that laughter. Anyway.
Yeah, I was like, what is the point of that? Anyway, great. Wonderful. Well, I love Jonathan.
Yeah.
I think everyone that's listening probably also loves Jonathan, unless you're a monster and you don't like awesome
bisexual
tortoises.
Icon, just like Lincoln.
That's true. Where was he when Lincoln got assassinated? Suspicious.
He did nothing
once again.
Wait, when was Lincoln born? Just a second. Sorry. This is important to me. Lincoln was born in 1809. So he was like in his 20s when... Yeah, he didn't do anything about the assassination, though. That's really upsetting.
Technically, he wasn't fully grown at that point. So maybe his, you know, he wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Was there anything he could have done is the question.
Well, he could have been a shield.
That's
in that
true.
Booth. He could have stood between him and the president.
The real question is, why didn't he stop 9/11? Ding. There you go.
You're right. He let Peter Wolf. Wait, what is his name? Is Peter Stump?
Peter Stump.
Who did 9/11 again?
Peter Stump.
Besides Bush, was it Peter Stump? Yeah,
Peter
the werewolf
Stump.
Guy. He let the werewolf guy just fly those planes into that building. Anyway.
Okay.
Your turn.
On to my death.
Take the ship and right it. Like steer it the right direction now.
Funny that you should say a ship of sorts.
Oh, really?
Because
are we eating turtles?
We're not eating turtles this week. So my tab, I decided to do something a little bit more lighthearted this week because the past couple ones have been a little bit intense on research and people saying different things and trying to sift through it, and it drove me insane. So mine starts on the name of the article that I pulled it from, or I should say that started this, is titled The Real DC Crime Wave. And it's an article from Politico. Right. As the title suggests, this is about crime, but it's a very specific kind of crime, which is suspiciously absent from the lamestream media.
This just turns into like a leftist talk radio or something.
Yeah. I wonder why the media is not covering this. Oh, is it because they themselves are the criminals here?
Oh, he's speaking the truth. That's a truth bomb.
Yeah, that's right.
He just broke the internet.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. You know why? Because this is a story about the press corps and how they all like to get together and steal shit every time they go on Air Force One.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay. Okay. I'm here. I'm ready.
So if you're like me, you probably don't know much about Air Force One or how any of that crap works. But thankfully, I found a few articles that like have explainers about how the press corps works when they're traveling on Air Force One that give it a little bit more context. There's I think his name's Job Sopel of the BBC. He wrote a nice little explainer. I'll include links to all this stuff in the notes.
Okay.
So a couple of things you got to know. So number one is the pool. The pool is a group of journalists who travel with the president.
And, at all times?
This is when they're invited because they're doing a thing, right? So if they're like, I'm going to go to D.C. or whatever. I'm sorry, well, he's in D.C. But if they're going somewhere else.
They get on an airplane and they fly in circles around D.C. and then they land.
They're like, listen, sometimes you just need to clear your head by going for a long flight. So because space is limited on the plane, it's not that big. It's limited to 13 people, roughly 13 journalists that are allowed to come on.
Well, that's a lot more than I thought.
Honestly, right? And you're not just working for your own news organization. You're working for all news outlets. So all material that they cover is shared and fed out simultaneously. So no one has a competitive advantage.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's just like one feed that they all get to do it. You said you wish that were always the case. I mean, technically, that's how a lot of it works. It's just like, it's just fact stuff. It's just like, this happened, this happened. It's not necessarily, I mean, that's a whole other problem that you're talking about that has to do with opinion-based news becoming more popular and social media and blah, blah, blah. And the same thing I always complain about blah, blah. Anyway, whatever. Uh-huh. Algorithms are ruining our lives. We're all going to die. As the name suggests.
Not Jonathan.
That's true. And then there's a thing called the bubble.
Okay.
And the bubble is the secure field in which all the journalists operate, just like how it was during the lockdown. And then parentheses, I just wrote for myself FML because I remembered the bubble and I wanted to die.
Yeah. Everyone had their bubble.
It's the same principle. So people in the bubble are quote unquote clean, and outside the bubble, they're quote unquote dirty. And the way this works is on the day of the flight, the pool shows up with their bags to the hotel where the president is staying. And as they come in, a dog will first sniff them to see if they're carrying drugs or any like crazy bad material. Then two Secret Service agents open up every piece of luggage that they have and sift through everything.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Then they go through metal detectors. So basically, this is like literally any Middle Eastern person going through any airport at any time.
It's you.
Any
part of the world. It's you at the airport every single time
I have
fly.
To travel. Yeah. But for journalists, it's a big deal. They're like, ooh, this is strange. This is actually the nice version, right? They didn't get take him down in the back and pat him down and, you know, question him and all this stuff.
Have you ever had that happen?
Oh, of course.
Taken away, like taken somewhere else?
You know where? In your home state. That's right.
Oh, I hate to say that makes sense.
That's a story for another time. But in Utah, they were very keen to take me somewhere else and talk to me.
That is so dumb. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
You should be. You definitely were in charge of that decision in Utah.
How did you know that I led the TSA in the Salt Lake Airport when that happened?
You accidentally texted it to me one night when you thought you were texting your TSA friends. And I was like, I'm just going to hold on to this until we're on the show. And then bam, you got caught.
I'm cornered. Well, someday tell that story or don't. It's up to you.
It's not a very fun story. It's a bummer. Anyway.
No, exactly. I'm sorry.
It's okay. But so this is the process that the journalists all go through. And then they board a bus and then they move in the presidential convoy. So that's like, you know, all the cars together with like the Secret Service and like the little train of things that are following them. And then from that point on, they're inside the bubble. So now they're kind of quote unquote clean. And they're not allowed to leave it. So then there's a Secret Service guy that's armed that's assigned to that group. They call him the Wrangler.
This all sounds so made up.
So this is the analog I was thinking. He's basically like their second AD or their key set PA, depending on the size of your show. So this is basically like film. This is the same thing.
Okay.
And then there's also a White House press officer who's yelling at them to move along, being like, okay.
So you.
Press corps. Yeah. He's like, this is just all the AD department. Like, if we had guns, which sometimes I wish we did so that people would listen to us, but.
Or so you could, like, take a lion down if it was kind of coming at you.
But you have to, like, use your words and, like, you know, convince people or try and, anyway, being an AD is a miserable job. These guys get to have guns, which is cool, so people can't argue with them. So they're like, time to move along. You got to go this way now. Time to go this way.
Incredible.
And then they're able to get on the plane. And once they're on Air Force One, again, don't forget, you're fine now. Now you've been vetted. You've been cleaned. You've been all your stuff's been gone through. There's no threat, theoretically, from anybody in the journalist pool. Also, as far as I can tell, there have not really been any like incidents with like a secret, you know, person trying to infiltrate the press corps and come in and destroy everything. It's like a pretty low stakes thing.
Interesting. That seems like a really easy way. I mean, not easy because they check you, but like a really direct way to do something diabolical.
Well, I'm sure all these people are being like super checked, you know, background checked. And,
vetted, yeah.
That'd be a very long game to be like, I had to write for the Washington Post for 10 years and like reach the top of my game and become the editor before they would let me on.
So I could. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Also, journalists are pretty specific types of people. I think if it was somebody who was not a journalist, you could tell.
You could tell. You're like, this person is...
This person's not opinionated. I don't know what they're doing on this plane. They're not indignant and arguing with everybody. I don't know if they're really a journalist.
There's no way.
No. I say that with love, by the way. The main rule while you're on board of Air Force One is that everyone can wander around, but you can only move towards the back from the area where you are seated. So,
what?
Just to give you context. So the president sits at the front and he can go anywhere. And he has a bedroom, a gym, and like a big conference room. He's got Yeah, there's all this stuff that's on there. And then up there with him, there are key staff and senior officials. In addition to that, there's a comms team, and they're all sitting at like these encrypted computers so that the president can never miss a text from the group chat. God forbid.
Oh,
what a nightmare.
Could you imagine?
I hate group chats. That's my first decree if I became a president, was to be like, no more family group chats.
It's a thing with the friend ones are fine. The family ones?
Can't. Can't do it. So if you're president, unfortunately, you still have to respond. You can't escape them.
Never.
There's also a medical station, his security detail, of course, and the Secret Service. And then in the way back, the dumper of the plane, if you will.
I will.
The dumper is where the press pool hangs out.
How'd they find out my nickname?
Anna Dumper Hillam. So
that's what they always called me.
I'm going to send you some pictures. So when they get to their seats, there's a nice printed invitation style card that welcomes them aboard Air Force One that's on top of a comfy cushion with the presidential seal.
Oh,
it's really simple. It's nothing like too elaborate.
It's like a hotel room.
Yeah, it's kind of what it feels like.
Here's the Wi-Fi password. Just kidding. Yeah, this is for the BBC. Welcome aboard Air Force One. Man, the choice of font there could have been different, but whatever. Really took me out of it. I really don't think that's professional.
Listen, as long as it's not papyrus, it's okay. They're like Comic Sans, just to give them a little bit of fun when they get on board.
When I'm president, that's what's going to happen.
From there, now behind them, behind the dumper.
You're just going to keep calling it that.
In the dumper of the plane. Further back, there's a proper kitchen with a team of chefs who buy fresh ingredients to cook proper meals. And there's also like ovens and like a stove. So it's like it's real food. It's not like you're not getting like, you know, pre-made whatever, like microwave
sandwiches,
crap sandwiches. They're not charging you for it. They all have meals.
That is on an airplane. Just on an airplane.
On an airplane. You're getting a real meal.
Just flying around.
Flying around.
Okay.
So they're like, we made you T-bone steak with it's like, you know, this fancy sauce and pasta. And people are like, can you actually, I just would like some chicken nuggets, please. Do you guys have chicken nuggets?
No, seriously. I associate chicken nuggets. I associate, that's your nickname, chicken nuggets chicken and nuggets. Dumper. We have a podcast together. I associate airplanes with misery to the point where I can't even imagine being on an airplane and enjoying it.
Yeah, it's especially
and getting nice food,
being with the president, and that's probably like the safest plane in existence.
Oh yeah.
By the way,
yeah, I don't trust any.
Yeah, I had to stop myself because I did look briefly when you look up Air Force One. In the page, it's like it's really cool because like there's all these don't look at it right now, but there's
how did you know I was about
I knew
to
immediately you were gonna start looking at it.
You could see it in my eyes. My eyes shifted a tiny bit
and I was just like, I know what she's gonna do, but it goes through it goes through like the history of Air Force One and how it's changed. It's pretty cool. That could have been a tab in and of itself of just getting into all of that, but that's a tab for another day.
And we have lots more.
We have lots
tabs
more.
We can get
infinite,
to.
Yeah. But
we'll just do this till we die. Yeah. That's my plan.
Hopefully soon. So,
I will live podcast from your funeral.
Just put me in the bog. So after the chef, after the chef makes their whatever chicken nuggets in the dumper, meals are served.
Okay, just continue. If I'm laughing, just ignore it.
Meals are served on the plane's crested bone china. And the paper... Why was that funny?
I don't know. You said bone, and I went off.
You're right. My mistake.
Dumper bone.
Meals are served on the plane's crested bone china. The paper napkins have the presidential seal and the words "aboard the presidential aircraft."
That is so dumb. No offense.
But.
Well, it just seems like a waste of. Anyway, go on.
No, go ahead.
I'm getting mad at.
No, go ahead. Tell me.
I just feel like that's like a huge waste of money. Probably taxpayer money, getting all these things like emblazoned with the signature of the whatever, the seal of the president. And like, why the nice food? Just eat regular food.
That's true. I don't know. I don't know if like the people are paying for it or the taxpayers. Maybe I should hold off on passing judgment because I'm not sure exactly where the budget from that comes from. I don't necessarily know if the White House is paying for, like, you know, journalists to eat, like, you know, super fancy filet mignon necessarily. But it's a nice, I mean, a lot of it, at the very least, it's for the staffers, right? It's for the staffers and the president and all that as well. I think they might have to pay for it, though, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh. I remember reading something about
this with the White House, where there was some interview with Michelle Obama talking about where like the chef made them like nice sushi, and they're like, "This is great, let's have it again tomorrow." And they're like, "We're gonna have to pay for this." That's a thing to dive into at some point. I don't know how much information.
And I'm also angry about that. Like, they shouldn't
have to pay, right?
Like, why am I angry about? Like, I'm angry about all of this. Anyway, continue.
There used to be Air Force One playing cards and even cigarettes. But they had to get rid of those, obviously, because you don't smoke anymore. I'll send you a picture of the playing cards that you can look at.
I would love to see Air Force One at the time of, like, again, Nixon or someone like that. Just, like, cigarette burned in the seats.
That's peak. Yeah, that's the 70s, too. That's, like, peak debauchery, like, whiskey stains everywhere.
Yeah, the carpet's, like, kind of stained for some reason.
Because that's 70s.
Oh, look at that. Welcome aboard Air Force One. I like that they have like a hand model holding these cards.
So the prize swag at the time that this person went on are these little boxes of M&Ms exclusive to Air Force One, replete with the presidential seal, which of course.
What?
Yeah. So here's another picture to look at. Go ahead and describe that to our audience.
Okay.
This is from when Obama was president.
If this isn't America in its essence, then I don't know what is. It is the red M&M looking all smug and weird, holding an American flag badly photoshopped into its gloved hand on like a
it's a box.
Of M&Ms.
Yeah, it's like a box with M&Ms in it.
This is the tackiest, most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Typical of airline travel these days, but hey, at least they're still giving snacks out.
That's true. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So does M&M make these just for the president?
It's just regular M&Ms, I think. M&Ms are the ones that are actually like produced. That's a good question. I don't know if they're actually producing them. If anybody knows.
Incredible.
Please send us an email, 500opentabs@gmail.com.
And send us some of them.
Yeah, well, I would love presidential M&Ms. I do love. I know you don't like peanut M&Ms. I love peanut. Hannah does not love peanut.
They're horrible. Why add... It's gross.
Yes.
When you could just have the good stuff.
I just hard disagree. On the other side of the box, by the way, is the presidential seal with Barack Obama's signature underneath. So it's.
Oh, yep.
I'm pretty sure he's too busy to autograph every box of M&Ms himself. But so I assume it's like a stamp or something.
He's sitting there all through the night just autographing M&M boxes.
They're like, Mr. President, we need to figure out. We need to order a strike on Osama bin Laden.
Bomb this village? Oh, yeah. We have him. We have him. Can
I need to finish these M&M autographs.
And then Michelle's just like, just kill bin Laden.
Meanwhile, Trump, that's all he did. They're like, Mr. President, can you please? And he's just like, no, I'm interested. They're like, we have enough boxes that have been autographed. You don't need to keep signing them.
That, you know, if I were like one of Trump's handlers, I would have been like, okay, your job for the next 4 years is to sign all of these boxes. Can you do that?
Yeah. You should have been doing that to raise money.
Yeah.
So some of these, like the snacks and the napkins, of course, are meant to be nabbed and used. But that hasn't stopped journalists from reportedly taking items meant to be more permanent, like pillowcases, glasses, and gold-rimmed dinnerware.
I love these journalists.
And so, I mean, basically, you know, we all kind of say like, you take towels or whatever, like that's a normal thing that we do. But straight up, these things are expensive, right? They're not expensive in terms of like, they're not spending a lot of money to make them. But some of these are like, they've been around for a long time.
And so like antiques.
Sometimes.
Kind of
I don't think the stuff on the plane, all of it is. I don't think they necessarily fly in with antiques. But again, it's not yours.
No, it's not.
It is not yours.
It does not belong to you.
You are stealing. And it's gotten so bad. So recently, this is like whatever, end of March. Last week, the White House put everyone on blast on TV and was like, dude, you guys are supposed to be professionals. Please stop stealing our shit.
publicly called out all journalists.
And one of the press wranglers emailed everybody who had been part of like a recent press pool, a recent trip. And the email, the people said, was not accusatory, but it was like, hey, if you inadvertently wound up taking some things, quote unquote, inadvertently, taking something off the plane by mistake, we can help facilitate a quiet return.
So it's pretty much like, you're not in trouble, but we need that plane
just
back.
Return it, and then we won't get pissed. So one person who received the email basically had gotten off the plane, quote unquote, accidentally with an embroidered pillowcase. And they wrote back being like, I seem to have accidentally gotten a pillowcase. Perhaps I should return it. My bad. I don't know. So they made an arrangement for like a discreet return.
Like a drop?
Yeah.
Like,
the shit straight
cars
up went like
pull up next
deep
to each
throat.
Other, drug deal style.
Someone's like smoking a cigarette in the shadows.
In just a trench coat.
Yeah.
Did you bring the goods?
Yeah.
They pull like, a beautiful pillowcase out of their other trench coat.
It's literally what this article says. So they said the Wrangler went to meet the reporter by the statue of, oh my God, the statue of Andrew Jackson in Lafayette Square. I swear to God.
Are you kidding?
Nope. That's what the that's what it says. I don't know. I think that's just where they decided it was like the neutral. They're like, everyone, no one goes here. This guy sucks.
This guy sucks. Get rid of the statue.
Yeah, so he's like, you got the money, I got the stuff. And they're like, yeah, you know, here you go. And they like, you know, exchange it. And he's like, pleasure doing business with you. And then they leave and they go back.
Oh, yeah. Always Jersey. Always New Jersey accents. They only choose people from, I love the idea of like a noir vibe of like with Andrew Jackson next to this big dumb, Andrew Jackson's big dumb head. On his statue body, and they just make this like drug deal. It seems like a drug deal, but it's a pillowcase.
It's literally a pillowcase.
I'm obsessed with this.
So of course, Air Force One was not enough for me. I was like, surely people steal from the White House too, right? Obviously. So here we go.
I'm sorry. There's excitement on my face. For those of you who are watching the video, I'm I am filled with love, energy, and happiness and love toward. Thieving from the White House.
So there's some of these are older, right? So first off, in a story that would outrage our boy, Nikola Jokic, tourists plucked hairs from the tail of old Whitey, President Zachary Taylor's horse from the Mexican War.
Okay, there's a couple things I want to talk about.
Let's hear it.
First of all, old Whitey, the dumb name.
Yeah.
Second of all, which president was Zachary Taylor?
The one who fought in the Mexican War.
I know about that war.
Yeah. Taylor. I don't know anything about Zachary Taylor, to be honest with you.
Me
other
either.
Than the fact that he had a horse named Old Whitey who was plucked bare by tourists who came to the White House.
Why would the first thing you're like, well, I'm going to take some hair off of that horse.
I think they were just like, if I have the strand of hair from Old Whitey, I guess I'm cool.
Luck.
I don't know. They're showing other people.
Yeah. Kind of a cool bragging, right?
Sad. I'm sad for that horse, Old Whitey. Even though his name is super racist, Old Whitey didn't deserve to get plucked.
Maybe
he's just a horse.
He just had white hair.
I'm sure that's all it was. Yeah.
But at the time...
I should have been like, Nikola Jokic, trigger warning. I'm sorry, but...
Yeah. He's like, throws his headphones down.
Yeah, he's just like, no!
This was my favorite podcast. Imagine.
No, we're upset about this as well. Just as upset as you would be.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like what they did.
Moving on. The aptly named William H. Crook, who was Lincoln's bodyguard.
Amazing.
Converted floorboards from the old Lincoln office during a 1902 renovation, because he kept working, into roughly a dozen canes for sale, like walking canes.
Like sell to tourists or like memorabilia?
Yeah, so he was just like, they were doing a remodel, so they took all the like wood, just so people know, it's like floorboards were taken out like one by one, and he was like, I'm gonna shave them into kind of like
walking
canes, like in whatchamacallit, like in Jurassic Park, where he's got like the cool, you know, mosquito and amber on top of it. He was just like, here's the memorabilia of things that you remember from Jurassic Park. It was like that, but it was like, own a piece of like the Lincoln office as a walking cane.
I would argue that's less of that's less stealing and more just like repurposing,
I suppose. But he was selling them for an exorbitant price and was inundated with requests until he basically couldn't produce anymore. So I guess you could argue that that's White House profiteering, sort of. I don't know. It's also like Lincoln, and he died and he was assassinated, ended slavery, despite Jonathan the Tortoise's.
Jonathan the Tortoise was in his office arguing for the not ending slavery. And Lincoln, I don't know what I'm talking about.
There's that.
Yeah, because I've found stuff from like ripped down houses, and I'm like, this is mine now. And now that I think about it, that might be stealing.
I mean, I don't know. You might have just confessed online, and this is going to be held up in a court of law. Oh, well, nice knowing you, Hannah. Hope you have fun in
so
prison.
Be it.
Moving on. Pieces of flatware engraved with the words, the president's house, kept vanishing after First Lady Laura Bush hosted an event. She wrote in her memoir, we used it only in the private dining room upstairs.
Oh, my goodness. So somebody on the inner circle was like, yoink.
Mm-hmm. They're not sure who it was. During the 2006 Easter egg roll.
Dick Cheney. It was Dick Cheney.
It's all Dick Cheney. He's just storing them in his giant, like, you know, toad throat. I have no idea why that's where I went, but I did.
Because that feels right.
Yeah. In 2006, also during the Bush era, Easter egg roll, again, in between planning 9/11, whatever we have to say. I think I already said it at the end, at the beginning of this, but just...
We've talked about 9/11 multiple times
in this episode. Okay, good. I didn't want to let anybody down. During the 2006 Easter egg roll, East Wing aides discovered a ring of volunteers had been secreting away wooden commemorative eggs and coloring books beneath the porta potties.
It's so classless. It's amazing.
Shameless.
You know, I would rather the porta potties than Andrew Jackson.
Can you imagine that coloring book just covered in shitty porta potty shit piss, and then being like,
"Yes,
I want you to buy and spend."
Scrub the eggs off. Scrub it off the eggs.
They promptly reassigned the volunteers to serve egg salad at the food tent in order to avoid making a scene. Yeah.
Wow. I just keep picturing these as scenarios, and they're all amazing.
Here's my favorite one. Leah Berman, who served as White House Social Secretary under George W. Bush, said, one woman was so brazen that she shoved presidential paper towels in her pants and shirt sleeves. And I quote, she was walking like the Michelin man when she exited. We went into the washroom and it was cleaned out. There's a fine line between petty theft and vandalism.
Just picture her like walking like she like crapped her pants. Filled to the brim with paper towel.
Shout out to the Michelin man, our old friend. Michelin should have done an ad for that.
They should have, yeah.
And okay, getting ready to wrap this up. Barbara Walters.
No.
Do you remember Barbara Walters?
Yeah.
Journalist Barbara Walters. She became so notorious for swiping washroom towels that in 2012, the first family sent her a basket of tchotchkes from the residence, including a spoon.
So Barbara Walters has been stealing towels from the White House for how long? Like years and years?
Yeah.
It was a thing. To the point where it's an inside joke and she doesn't even get in trouble for
it. Oh, okay. No, here we go. So Michelle Obama went on Entertainment Tonight several months later and said, quote, it's always just a tremendous joy to have her here as she tries to steal various items from the White House. Barbara, you can take whatever you want, whenever you want.
She pretty much was like, it's all yours. Okay. I want to see a movie or like even just found like CCTV footage of Barbara Walters and stealing everything she stole.
Shoving them in her purse.
A mashup. just seeing how she does it and when. That's incredible.
Yep.
My hero.
Lastly, because even Oscar winners are not above this, Meryl Streep is also a repeat.
There?
Yeah, right? I'm not an Oscar winner. I was in an Oscar winning film. Please.
That counts.
That's true. Oscar winner, yeah. Meryl Streep is also a repeat offender.
Why?
Why not?
What did she take?
I mean, towels. Yeah. Towels. Yeah, they all steal towels. For some reason, they all steal towels. I don't know why.
That's so weird. Here's the thing. If I did it, I'd be arrested and put in jail. But since it's Meryl Streep, she can just get away with it because she's famous.
Yeah. Also, so this is the one thing I'll say about this is like there's the one article I found that had the list of stuff. It's from the Washington Post. And I was like, I was like, I'm joking, obviously, being like, oh, the criminals are the journalists themselves. But I'm like, these stories are very like hand wavy. They're very just like, oh, yeah. People get so excited that they're there. It's just like, I'm like, it's crime. Exactly like you said, like if you got stolen, you would have gotten arrested or there was a talking
to. The Secret Service would tackle me and rip that towel out of my hands.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just wanted to put, much like the White House did, I wanted to put the press on blast and be like, you're still stealing shit. Just because you're rich and influential doesn't mean that you can keep doing it.
Stealing.
I mean, the people in the press aren't rich, but you know what I'm saying.
No, but you know what? Part of me sees the thrill of it.
Oh, I absolutely relate to this. Don't get me wrong. This is like every immigrant family member of mine would 100% do this without question.
Yeah, I mean, why not? You know, you're in the White House. You're like, I'm never going to come back here. This spoon is shiny and it has some words on it.
Yeah.
I'll just slip it into my pocket.
But it's always...
I don't think I'd feel bad.
No, I wouldn't.
No. Interesting.
Yeah. That's the list of stuff that I had found that people had stolen.
I had no idea that anyone ever... I mean, I guess it makes sense. Like, because you hear... I know, like, everyone was, like, accusing Hillary Clinton of stealing a bunch of stuff when she left the White House, but it turned out not to be true. But, like, I'm sure people do. I'm sure even, like, presidents take stuff and don't bring
Yeah,
back.
Like, classified documents and then hold them in their toilet.
Oh, that too, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. That's pretty funny. And it's just funny to, it shows like humans like pettiness.
Oh, 100%.
Like,
yeah.
I'm just going to take this.
It's
mine. And the fact that I relate to that, I'd be like, oh, I would do it.
Yeah.
And now I'm like thinking deeply about my morals.
I think it's the same thing where you're like, I'm ripping off a corporation, but it's like, I'm ripping off the U.S. government that my taxes paid for. So it's kind of like,
I paid for this towel.
You can make, I was going to say, you can make the argument where, like, this is mine. I paid for it. I'm just taking it.
Yeah.
I think that's an okay loophole. Yeah. I'd be okay with that. Yeah.
I think that's an okay loophole.
That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Interesting. I was also, Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
That's my tab.
I love it. Thank you. That was a pretty quick one.
Yeah. I decided to not go for a million hours like I usually do.
Okay.
I'm trying to be, I think I had gone very long the past couple of them. So I'm trying to get back to like a proper
2-hour episode.
Yeah. The past couple episodes went very long. So I'm trying to rein us in a little bit.
I'm glad someone is.
Anyway, let us pull up our tabs in order to close them.
All right.
If I can find my tabs. Aha.
Okay.
What is the...
You count us?
What is the sound we want to use to close this?
Oh,
should it be tortoise mating?
If there is, yes.
Tortoise surfing?
I don't know if they make sound. I know they do make sounds when they're mating.
Yeah, they do.
Because I found, so let's do this. Alyssa? Let's see how close
you
are.
Just repeat that sound. Yeah, right?
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah, you count off.
We count down. Okay. 3, 2, 1. What?
Sound of Jonathan.
A beautiful
and
sound. Yeah.
True love.
Living their best lives. Anyway, that felt good. Moving on.
That did feel good.
To listener emails. You're going to go first
listener
this week.
Emails.
Go for it.
Mine comes from Jazz from Dallas, Texas. And I think Jazz is actually on our Discord, right?
That does sound familiar.
I'm pretty sure this is from the... Anyway, speaking of Discord, go join it. Dear Kaveh and Hannah, this tab is a link to a Google Sheet. Oh, interesting. That lists out songs by a TikToker named Chloe Ament, who often writes from the perspectives of popular characters or is inspired by specific fandoms.
Okay.
Trying to keep this straight in my head. The spreadsheet helpfully categorizes each song by which specific character, ship, scene it is inspired by. Okay. For example...
Ship for you young people.
is...
Relationship. It's like a love between two characters, I think, is what it is.
Yes, it is. And it's also where you can eat turtle meat.
That was a good callback.
Tortoise meat. For example, she has songs for the Harry Potter fandom, etc. I was sent this tab by a friend of mine who is much more tapped into Gen Z culture than I am. She's always asking me things like if I know what Midwest emo is, or if I've heard of that obscure Percy Jackson musical. No, not the one that was on Broadway, the other one.
I didn't cover that in the last show, so I don't know.
I don't think anyone knows what it is. I've never heard of that. I've only read the books, anyway. I always say no, and she usually sends me a link to provide more context. Okay, oof. I'm keeping this straight in my head. Okay. My friend knows I love the Grishaverse. Oh, the John Grisham.
Oh, like John Grisham, the like the client and all that shit?
Yes.
Is that a thing? I was like, that's so early 90s. I didn't know kids now like cared about John Grisham novels.
Oh, man. Were you ever on Tumblr?
Briefly, but like not, I wasn't in like the Tumblr fandom or anything. It was just like my friend and I would just
There's a fandom for everything.
But just Grisham is funny because I just think of like the early 90s when there was like 50 John Grisham movies. I thought that was like forgotten in time. I didn't realize that was a thing that people still cared about.
And they call it the Grishaverse.
Sure. Okay.
And when she realized this is the fandom based around the Lee Bart. Oh my gosh. I just got it all wrong.
It is not John Grisham.
Put me in the bog. Okay. Okay. When she realized that this is the fandom based around the Lee Bardugo YA fantasy books and not John Grisham.
We just showed how old we are so hard.
She shared this tab with me since Chloe has Grishaverse songs. Oh, yeah. The lady that... Okay. I haven't yet listened... This is a rabbit hole. This is like a twisty-turny.
This is wild.
I haven't yet listened to all of Chloe's records, but I found it sweet that my friend heard this TikToker's music and thought of me. 2023 was really the year I got into podcasts, and I was heartbroken after musical splaining ended.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
Look at you. What have you done?
Breaking hearts. Thank you for listening to the show, though. I'm sorry that I broke your heart, but thank you for continuing to listen to this one. And writing in. It's wonderful.
She says, they say, I don't know. So thank you for helping me continue my pod-loving journey with you.
That's very nice. Thank you.
Super nice. You're both talented artists and comforting voices.
So many compliments in a row.
It's super nice. I love learning and laughing with you. And I love that for every tab you close, you open 13 more. Thanks, Jazz. All those compliments made me deeply uncomfortable, but also very nice. It was very nice.
That's lovely. What a lovely message. Thank you, Jazz. Okay. All I'm thinking of other than the compliments is now there should be a John Grisham verse.
There should. Like,
the client and the Rainmaker.
It's all like 55-year-old men.
Yeah.
I bet there's an archived internet forum that's like the
Grisham verse.
Grisham verse. Yeah.
John Grisham. I think the last, what was the last one? Was the Rainmaker? What's the one that Coppola did? I'm drawing a blank on it. Anyway, whatever. They don't matter.
You're talking to somebody who doesn't understand.
I'm talking to myself, basically.
yes.
Okay. Jazz, did you get a chance to listen to any of the songs?
Nope.
Okay. No worries. we will link to the Google Sheet.
Yes.
So other people can listen to it. And maybe we'll
listen to it as
well.
I'm the queen of not doing what anyone tells me to do.
Wait, what did we say earlier? I'm not dumb.
I'm not dumb.
I'm a forget is what we kept saying.
That's right. I'm not a dumb. I'm a forget.
That's true. You're a forget. You're not a dumb. I understand. I'm also not dumb. I'm a forget. No, I'm not a forget. I'm a distract.
Yes, that's right. You're a distract.
I'm a distract and you're a forget.
The dumper and what was your nickname? Shoot, I forgot.
Anyway, okay, moving on to email number two.
Okay.
It comes from Philippe in Montreal, Quebec. Montreal.
Quebec.
Quebec.
You better say Quebec.
Quebec. Quebecois. Hi, Cobb and Hannah. I hope you are doing great. Love your show. I'd like to tell you about the mythical tale of Big Joe Mufara, known as... J-O-S. I don't know if that's Joe or Joss. Joe.
Joseph, is there a period after it?
No, it just says J-O-S. I'm just going to say Jos.
Yeah, I don't know.
Montferrand, which is also where the Michelin company was from in France. Don't forget.
Wait, really?
That was the name of the town, was Montferrand. Yeah. But this is his last name. In Quebec. So now I'm just picturing the Michelin man. This is a tale of Big Joe Mufara in Quebec. He lived in the mid-19th century and, as a living, was working in the wood industry, leading rafts of cut-down trunks down the rivers in the west of the province of Quebec near the Ontario frontier. It was a pretty dangerous job, but what Big Joe is now known for is for being big and strong. And by that, I mean really big and really strong. So it sounds like he's...
Paul Bunyan.
Paul Bunyan, exactly.
Yeah.
A bit of historical context... French-speaking Canadians were more or less relegated to do the dirty work, while the English-speaking Canadians in Quebec were getting paid better jobs. We're getting better paying jobs. Are you laughing because you know this?
Classic. No, just classic. Yeah. Every single story we tell, it's like, and then the English-speaking people came in and ate all the turtles or relegated
created
the dirty
class
work
divisions.
Created class divisions.
In the 19th century, there was a wave of immigration from Ireland, which created a rivalry between the French Canadians and the Irish Canadians. Anyway, legend has it that Big Joe once fought off a group of 150 Irish Canadians by grabbing one of them by the leg and using him as a bat to knock in the Ottawa River the rest of the mob. Jesus Christ. It also said that he used to kick with his heel the ceiling of the taverns when he entered. Okay. And of course.
Oh, like going through the door and then the leg goes back and just,
bam.
Yeah.
And of course.
Sounds like a menace.
Yeah. And it says there's a little bit of exaggeration in these stories, but he is now a cultural figure throughout Canada. And this is what I like the most about him. He is now remembered as someone cherished by both the French speaking and the English speaking Canada, someone who unites us all. That's a bummer, but okay, sure. Love you guys. I wish you all the best, and I'll be waiting for your next episode. Sorry for the bad English, Phil. P.S. I'm just hoping to get Hannah into another rabbit hole as I'm writing this. Oh, she's like, oh no.
Oh no. What are you going to do?
The episode of Intermittent Werewolfing, and in it you said the word muskrat came from a Native American language. I'm not an expert, and I could be 100% wrong, but this one seemed odd to me. In French, muskrat is rat musqué, musqué meaning an animal with musk, which is kind of a thing that smells bad and is used in the perfume industry. In any case, according to my free app, the translation of musk in English is musk. And according to the Google search, musk etymology, the word comes from the Latin muscus, and that either comes from the Persian musk. Or the Sanskrit muska, both meaning scrotum, closing the circle with avocado and the testicle toast.
Everything is balls.
Everything is balls.
It's so yes. Philip is Philippe, correct. Yeah. The only reason that it says it's a Native American word is because when they heard the Native Americans say it, it reminded them of the word musk. So they took the word musk and were like, "Oh, that kind of sounds like musk," and musk means gross little animal or dirty little animal or whatever.
Scrotum.
It means scrotum.
Elon Scrotum is destroying Twitter and the rest of the world. Don't drive a scrotum back to Tesla. This is joyous news.
I also love that almost every story traces back to Persians.
To scrotum? Oh, yes, to Persians. That's nice.
You guys just like started everything.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard this or not, this whole the Greeks invented everything. I'm like,
no, the Greeks took.
Yeah. Anyway, don't get me started, because I'll never stop.
I want you to get started.
No,
next time.
End of the episode. We're trying to stop.
Ooh, we should do a thing. I have an idea.
What's that?
We should just do an episode where we try to get each other to go on the longest rant possible.
We'll have ones of listeners to that podcast episode.
I want to hear everything about the Persian Empire.
Thank you guys for your emails.
Thank you.
If you would like to submit an email of a tab that you've closed, please go ahead and email us at 500opentabs@gmail.com. That's 500opentabs. Let us know a little bit about what you learned or something funny. Include the link. Tell us your name and where you're from. And hopefully we will choose you to be on the end of the episode. And speaking.
Yeah. And if you want.
Go ahead. Oh. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No. What were you going
to
say?
I was going to say, and speaking of the end of the episode, we've come to the end of the episode, but go ahead.
Yes, we have. You can follow us at 500 Open Tabs on Instagram and on X, right?
X.
I don't know. Blue Sky? Are we on Blue Sky?
Not as an organization, we're not on Blue Sky. I'm on Blue Sky. Are you on Blue Sky? I think you are, but you never go on it.
Yeah.
It's open now. You don't need an invite anymore to get on Blue Sky. Yeah.
Nice. So yeah, you can follow us at 500 Open Tabs, and you can follow me at Hannah Hillam on everything.
You can follow me at PermaFriends on Instagram, at Covetarian on X, and then find me on Blue Sky. A couple of quick announcements. So again, we mentioned this last time. We do have a link to what we're calling 500 Open Roads, which is the Google Map list that we've made. I should say our friend Joe made it. We didn't make it. That if you pull it up and
join it,
It'll give you pins of all the places that we've talked about so far on the show. It's really fun and cool to be able to see it.
Yeah.
If you're close by, it's probably like a good little motivator to hop in the car and listen to a couple of episodes. And each one of the pins will also reference which episode we talk about that specific item. So we're coming for you, Michelin Guide. Additionally, we have a Discord that continues to grow every day.
It's alive and well.
It's alive
People
and well
are
and healthy.
Active.
It's wonderful.
Just like Jonathan.
Exactly. Hopefully it'll outlive us like Jonathan too. It'll just keep going for the next 200 years. Yep. Of course, please, rank the show. Rate the show. Follow the links for sponsors. Tell everybody about it.
Share with your friends.
Please share.
That's like the best way.
Yeah.
Like if this episode reminded you of anybody in your life, just send it over to them. Be like, hey, thought of you.
Yeah, we're really trying to grow. It's the nascent stages of this show. So we're trying to.
Yeah.
And anytime you try and post anything on any social media network, it tends to be like, nope, you got to pay $1,000 to be able to do this anywhere. So we're counting on
and
you guys.
And then when you pay some of the money, it still doesn't work.
I'm going to get angry now talking about it. So we should probably end the show.
Yeah. I think we're always right on the verge of getting angry.
We had an hour and a half of being calm, and now the rage is going to creep back in.
It's coming. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, thank you guys. Stay Josie. Keep it Josie. I guess we change it every week.
Keep it Josie.
Yeah. Keep it Josie.
Keep it Josie.
And
we'll see you next week.
Till next time. Bye, everyone.